and he's hiding it. Yet I know that's not the case because he let that woman touch him, remove his hoodie without any reservation. When I tried, he shied away, saying he wanted me to know him. What does that even mean? My shins collide against the couch. I hold my breath, waiting for him to move, waiting for his eyes to open and find me staring at him like a stalker. My eyes appraise him. His dark stubble from a few days' growth mocks me, as if it knows that this is one of my favorite things about a man. I allow myself to take in his form. His stomach shows the dark swath of hair, leading to a place I should never think about because he's not my husband. But I can't help it. He intrigues me, even though I'm not willing to admit these feelings out loud. Can I go the rest of my life being this way, not willing to let another man in? Is this what Mason would want from me? Josie and Liam are insistent that Mason would be okay with Harrison. But how do they know? Is this something Liam and Mason discussed before he was taken from our lives? Mason and I never discussed whether we should find happiness with someone else if one of us was to die early. What if it was me? Would Mason move on a year after I left this world? I'd want him to. My girls need a mom. So why is it okay for me to accept that Mason would move on, but not myself? Harrison shifts slightly, and before I can move, his hip bumps my leg. His eyes open cautiously, probably wondering what he just hit. I take a step back and start to stumble. He reaches out and grabs my arm to steady me, keeping me from falling on my ass. His hand slides down my arm until his fingers are linked with mine. He pulls me forward until my knees hit the couch. But that's not close enough for him, or for me. I don't know what I'm doing. I feel out of control, as if someone else is making my body move. I lean forward and trail my fingers down his arm, over the ink. It's the first time I've touched a tattoo, and I expected his skin to be raised, not smooth. Harrison watches my every move without saying a word. His skin pebbles as I move up and down his arm, as does mine. He's not even touching me, and I feel excitement. When I look at him, his eyes are steady on mine. A smile plays at my lips, and I hate it. I hate that he can do this to me when it shouldn't be like this. He sits up, his hand cupping my face. I lean in as if it's automatic for me to do something like this. His thumb glides gently over my cheekbone, his fingers threading into my hair. I look at him and know what's coming next, and I'm so powerless to stop it, because as much as my heart doesn't want to kiss him, my body wants him. He bites my bottom lip, bringing me to his mouth. I sigh, urging him on. My hand cups his cheek, my fingers pushing under the hat he's wearing, feeling his short hair against the pads of my fingertips. He pulls me closer, our chests touching. Everything in my heart is telling me to stop, that this isn't right. But my body is telling him, yes, I want this. Harrison wraps his arm around my waist, leaving no space between our bodies. He moves me so I'm sitting on his lap. My hand roams down his chest, my fingers finding their way under his shirt. His breathing hitches when I touch him. He places kisses along my jaw, nibbling my neck as my hand explores his chest. The soft kisses and dangerous bites he's giving me drive me crazy. This shouldn't be happening. I shouldn't feel like this in another man's arms. But I do feel like this, and I can't help but want more. Crave more. Harrison, I say, barely above a whisper. He pulls away, resting his forehead against mine. Our breathing is heavy with anticipation. It could be so easy to fall into his arms and forget the heartache I've been dealing with. But I can't, in good conscience, enter into a relationship with him.
Please don't tell me to stop, Caitlin. I can't. I can feel that you want this as much as I do.
I shake my head without breaking our contact. Why doesn't he understand that I can't be anything more to him? I need to remove myself from the situation. Keep things professional between us. The ringing of his cell phone causes me to pull away. I move, keeping one of the couch cushions between us. He pulls out his cell phone, only breaking eye contact when he looks at the screen. He silences it and looks back at me. We need to talk.
Why?
He asks. Because this can't happen between us. Harrison leans his arms on his knees and sighs.
So you've said. Yet you're the one in here watching me while I sleep, touching me, and encouraging me to pursue this with you. You got jealous when I left the bar the other night with a woman. You acted like we were something at the park. I don't get you at all.
His cell phone rings again, before I can respond. He silences it.
I want to get you, Caitlin. I want to understand what goes on in your head and be there when you need someone. I can be that person for you.
How do you know?
Because I do.
He gets up and starts to pace, only to be stopped by his cell phone again. Shouldn't you answer that? It must be important.
No, I shouldn't, and it's not important. You're important. You're what matters right now,
he says as he drops to his knees in front of me. I can't.
Can't or won't.
Is there a difference? I ask.
Can't means there's something physically holding you back from me, and I know that's not true. I could feel it when you kiss me, and just now, the way you were touching me, exploring with your hands. Won't means you won't give in to temptation, but we already know that's not true. You've let me kiss you. You've let me hold you against my body. Neither of these are valid reasons. I know you've lost your husband. I know every day is a battle for you because you miss him. I'm not trying to take his place with you or the twins. I just want to fit into your life.
You make everything sound so easy. Harrison pulls my hand into his.
It is,
he says with such confidence. It's not.
Only because you don't allow it.
Our lifestyles are different. I'm a mom of two who needs to be home at all times. You're a drummer in a band who leaves all the time and spends months on the road. You have all these women throwing themselves at you. And I wouldn't be able to trust the situation. I've seen it firsthand. I don't know how Josie does it, but I wouldn't be able to. We're too different.
Different is good.
No, different causes problems. There are expectations that have to be followed.
Expectations?
He questions, raising his eyebrow. Harrison stands in front of me, making me look up at him. People have expectations of me, I say quietly. He leans over me, one arm resting on the arm of the couch.
You give a shit about what people think?
My throat constricts because I hate that I do care about what people think. I nod and break eye contact because I don't think I can take the look he'll give me.
That's such bullshit. He won't be with me because you're worried about what people will think. What if they think, wow, look at Caitlin. She's found someone to love her and the girls. Or is that not good enough for you?
I look at him when he says love. He's got to be joking. No one can love a widow with two kids. Love? I question, wanting to know his answer.
Yeah, love. I can see myself falling in love with you. And as much as I'm trying not to, it's not working,
he says quietly. He sits down next to me and leans back into the couch.
I don't know what else to say. I shouldn't have to sell myself to you. You either like me or you don't. Thing is, you can't lie. I know you feel something. You just have to let yourself believe I'm good enough to be a part of your life.
His phone rings again. I throw my hands up in the air. Seriously? Answer your damn phone. He rolls his eyes and picks it up.
Hello. Yeah, I remember. How'd you get my number?
Harrison has a confused look on his face. He bites his lip as he listens to his caller.
Okay. Please don't call me again.
He hangs up and puts his phone in his pocket. Who is that? I ask, even though it's none of my business. He shrugs. See, this is one of the reasons. I know it was a woman. I could hear her whiny voice. Has she been the one calling you for the last hour?
It doesn't matter who it was. What matters is that you don't want to be with me. Yet you're still sitting in this room when you should be doing your job and getting things set up for tonight. I was in here because I can't sleep on the bus. The room is yours now.
I'm taken by his harsh tone, but this is what I've asked for. My lips form a thin line as I fight the urge to say something stupid. I nod and stand up. I look at Harrison, but he's looking at his phone, ignoring me. The door swings open and Liam barges in with the biggest pissed-off look I've ever seen. Jimmy is following behind him. I look from Liam to Harrison, who doesn't acknowledge the guys being in here.
"What have you done?"
Liam asks in an incredulous tone. "What are you talking about?"
"This."
Liam holds up a piece of paper and shakes it. I walk over and pull it out of his hands. It's the contract for the venue. As I read it, my stomach drops. I don't...
"You're right. You don't. This is bullshit, Caitlin. Aren't you paying attention?"
"I am," I say with a shaky voice.
"What is it?"
Harrison asks.
"Seems Caitlin has double-booked us for the rest of the tour. We are supposed to be in Colorado and Seattle tomorrow night." "How is that possible?"
Harrison stands and walks over to take the paper from Liam. He reads it over, looking at me for answers that I can't give. I never set any dates in Colorado, so I'm not sure how they ended up with a contract.
"Says we lose $10,000 if we don't show." "Yep, sure does."
My heart drops, and dread takes over my body. An error somehow on my part just cost the guys $10,000. Harrison looks from Liam to me, and I know this time he's not coming to my defense. I've ruined any chance of having him in my corner when I told him that I couldn't be with him. He hands me the contract and leaves the room, followed by Jimmy, and lastly, Liam. I jump when the door slams shut and don't even bother stopping the tears when they flow.
Chapter 15. Harrison. I lie on my bed with my hands behind my head, replaying the last few days over and over in my head. Now that the tour is over, albeit cut short, reality is jumping up and down, reminding me that school is about to start, that I have to be a responsible parent. My circle of friends, people I've depended on for so long, are living their lives in L.A., while Quinn and I live the high life in Beaumont. I shouldn't have to remind myself that this is what I wanted. I just thought things would be different. Hell, I don't know what I thought, but definitely not this. I'm not gonna lie. I want her in my bed at night. I want to wake up and find her cooking breakfast for our kids. I want to come home at night and have everyone gathering around the table for dinner. But that's not going to happen. She's made herself very clear. And I can't continue putting myself out there for rejection. A man can only take so much in his lifetime. I look at the clock and sigh heavily. This year I'm taking Quinn to buy his school supplies. Usually my mom or Megan, his nanny, has done it, and now it's my turn. It's time for me to grow up, I guess. I get up, get dressed, and slip into my boots, looking down at my attire. I know Caitlin snubs her nose at the way I look. I've seen her do it, and that's fine. I'm not going to change for her or anyone. I like my t-shirts, khaki shorts, beanie, and either my boots or Vans. Hell, I've been known to wear Chucks before. Aren't those supposed to be considered high-class guy fashion or something? I knock on Quinn's door and open it, sticking my head inside. He's sitting in his beanbag chair playing his Xbox. "Want to go school shopping?" "Sure," he says as he powers down his console. It's a proud dad moment when he doesn't argue or roll his eyes. I know those days are coming, and honestly, I don't know what I'll do the first time he smarts off to me. He walks ahead, his clothes matching mine, everything except for the hat. He likes to keep his hair styled, something I never did at his age. Quinn is nothing like me. He's confident and self-assured, making friends easily. I was shy and awkward, always alone, never fitting in. I thank my lucky stars that he's different from me. I'm not sure how I'd handle things if he had a childhood like I did. We walk to our car, the nondescript family car that I bought when we moved here so we wouldn't draw unwanted attention with something flashy. I still have my motorcycle in the garage, but haven't really taken it out much, aside from a few rides with Liam. I'm trying to live a normal life, one away from the balance in my checkbook, and give Quinn a quiet life, which is why I let Megan go and didn't ask her to move with us. Quinn has spent far too much time in her care because of my job, and now Liam's provided me an opportunity to be home more. Driving into town, I can't help but look over at him while he watches the scenery pass him by. He's well-adjusted and acts like nothing bothers him, and I want to believe that, but sometimes question if he needs something else, mainly a mom. Not that I'm going to run out and get married, but maybe bringing Megan here is an option. I pull into the parking lot of the mall and look around at the other parents taking their kids shopping. Now I know why I never cared when my mom took Quinn shopping. This place is nuts. Grandma sent me a list of things she usually buys you. She didn't tell me the mall would be like this, though. Quinn starts to laugh as he gets out of the car. I follow, locking it behind us.
It's not so bad. Grandma always bought me ice cream, though.
He looks up at me and bats his eyes. I shake my head. Of course she did, I say as I throw my arm around him. We walk toward the lion's den. The James men. Brave. And incredibly stupid. Quinn walks from store to store, with me following behind, carrying his bags. I never knew my son was such a shopper. That definitely has to be Evie rubbing off on him. I can't remember a time when I'd step foot in a shopping center. They scare me. People just stare at me. We manage to get everything on my mom's list, and then some.
Hey, Dad?
What's up, bud?
Are you and Caitlin going to be boyfriend and girlfriend?
I put the books back on the shelf and try to compose my thoughts. This is exactly why I've never brought anyone home. I don't want Quinn getting attached to anyone. Caitlin's around because she works for the band and because of Liam and Josie. But he knows I like her. Nah, I don't think so. I watch as his face drops. Come on, let's go get some lunch and we'll talk about it. I put my hand on his shoulder and guide us out of the store. I nod at the cashier when we pass and turn toward the food court. We order from the staple of every mall food court, McDonald's, and find a place to sit that can accommodate our bags. I'm thankful that no one is paying enough attention to notice me. I'm not in the mood to sign autographs today.
Do you ever talk to Elle or Peyton?
Quinn shrugs.
Not really. Peyton is always with Noah, but she doesn't talk much.
You know that their dad died last year, right? He nods as he sticks a French fry in his mouth.
Yeah, Noah talks about Mason all the time. It's sad that they lost their dad.
It is, I agree. And sometimes it's hard for people to move on after they have lost someone they love so much.
Is that why Peyton is always upset?
I nod. I think so. From what Liam has told me, Peyton and her dad were very close, and she's having trouble adjusting. Quinn watches some of the people around us. He picks at his lunch, not really engaging in eating it.
You okay?
He shrugs.
I kinda thought Caitlin was going to be my mom. I saw you guys together, and know you like her. I don't know. Noah is always talking about how great it is to have two parents, and I know you like her, and I think she likes you. I just thought...
His voice carries off while he plays with the wrapper from his straw. He doesn't look me in the eyes, but down at his hands. What if he's not mine? I continue to pace. I was counting my steps, but lost count after 5,000.
Of course he's yours, Harrison. He looks just like you.
I roll my eyes and pull on my lip ring. He looks like the old man next door. Doesn't make him mine. My mom stands, setting Quinn, that's the name I gave him, on her shoulder. She rubs his back, soothing him. Not that he's crying, but he likes that. What if she comes back and takes him away?
Harrison.
Mom steps closer and puts her hand on my arm.
I remember a day a few months back, when you wouldn't even look inside his car seat. And now you're worried she isn't going to come back?
I shrug. He's my life. I love him. Tears glisten in her eyes. I have to look away. I hate when she cries.
It only took a day, which in my opinion was far too long before I picked him up. I didn't know what I was doing. He was crying, and rocking him wasn't working, so I took a chance. And the moment he nuzzled into my neck, I was a goner. He's yours, sweetie. I don't believe her. Nothing good can come of my lawyer calling me and telling me I need to come down. It's been 6 weeks since we took the test. The longest weeks of my life, wondering if he's mine, and watching out the window to see if she'd come back. Mr. James. I turn when my name is called. My body turns cold. I take a deep breath and stare down the hall that leads to my lawyer. To a man who holds my future in his hands. My mom pushes me forward. My steps are tentative as I drag my feet and follow behind her. Quinn, still on her shoulder, looks at me, his toothless smile making my steps just a bit faster. For months, I've held him in my arms, waiting for this moment, praying that a simple piece of paper will confirm what my heart feels, that he's mine. My mom sits. I choose to stand behind her, near the door, for a quick escape. My palms sweat and my heart races. I think I'd rather listen to him cry for hours than sit in here and wait for a short man with beady eyes tell me my fate. My mom looks over her shoulder and reaches for my hand, holding it for reassurance. Mr. James, he says as he shuffles paper back and forth on his desk. Shouldn't he be ready? He called me and asked me to come in. You'd think everything would be in an orderly fashion. I trust your day is going well? It's fine, I reply. Okay, well, I have the results here, and also another matter we need to discuss. I roll my neck, trying to loosen up my nerves. He picks up the stack of papers and taps them against his oversized desk. He knows I'm paying him by the hour. That's why he's stalling. He leans back in his chair, holding a single sheet of paper in the right light so I can see print, but I'm unable to make out the words. In my hand, Mr. James, are the paternity results that you requested. Okay, I say, trying to control my shaking leg. I want to reach across the desk and rip that paper out of his hand and read it. Quinn squeals, catching my attention. I rub my hand on the top of his head, his baby fine hair standing on end. He puts his chubby hand in his mouth and starts sucking. The child known as Quinn James is yours. You're 99.9% his father. I bend over and let out the breath I had been holding. My mom rubs my back as I fight back the sob that is threatening to take over. 5 months ago, when he showed up, I didn't want him. But now, I'd never let him go. He's my son. I have more news, my lawyer says. I stand up and give him a slight headshake for him to continue. Miss Tucker has been located, he says, as he turns back to his desk. I freeze at the one name that can change anything. He sets his hands in front of him, his fingers forming a tent, much like my guidance counselor at school when he'd speak to my mom about me not being social enough for his liking. My lawyer may be pissing me off, but he's been very upfront with my rights. Alicia can come back and take Quinn from me. All she has to do is claim some type of depression shit, and I'd lose my son. He says the courts side with the mothers first and listen to the fathers later. I don't want that. And? I encourage him to continue. I need to know. I need to hear the words out of his mouth. He extends his hand, holding a piece of paper. What's this? I ask. Miss Tucker has signed away her parental rights. Quinn is yours and available for adoption by your wife when you choose to marry. I'm never getting married, I mumble as I read over the document, saying she's relinquishing all her parental rights. He's mine?
He's yours, honey,
my mom says. She's crying into my shoulder, but I know they're happy tears because I'm shedding them as well. He's mine.
Do you miss Megan? If you do, I can call her and see if she'll move here.
Maybe moving away from all the women in his life wasn't the smartest thing to do. I didn't think he would need them. Maybe I don't know what an 8-year-old needs.
No, it's okay. I just...
He shrugs again. I reach forward and still his hand with mine. He looks up. I raise my eyebrow, waiting for him to answer.
I like Caitlin. She's nice to me.
I sit back and study my son. The matchmaker. Who knew? I fucking love that she's nice to him, and nothing would make me happier than for her to give us a chance. I look out into the courtyard and watch a few people, while I compose my thoughts. Dads and moms with their kids, all getting ready for school. And here I am, living the single life because I'm afraid to love anyone, except her. There's something about her. And I don't know if I can say it's just one thing. I love her hair, her eyes, or maybe it's the way her lip curls when she's really happy. She doesn't know that I watch her like I do. I take in her presence every chance I get. I don't know how to answer my son. For the first time ever, I'm going to clam up and keep my thoughts to myself for fear of what I might say. Come on, let's go to Noah's. You can play and I can work for a bit. Quinn cleans up and carries the tray to the garbage can. He walks a bit slower. He's either tired or thinks he's done something to upset me. I bump him lightly, earning a grin, one that hasn't changed from when he was a baby. I can't get Quinn's comments out of my head. Pounding on the drums doesn't do anything to alleviate my stress either. Every time I close my eyes, I see her beneath me, and hate that it's all in my imagination. I need to get over her, to move on, and get her out of my system. The song that I had been working on during the tour is on replay in my mind. I pull the lyrics out of my pocket and pick up a pen. I know Liam has written songs about Josie and continues to do so. He says it's one of the best things about them. He writes and sings to her, and she's instantly dropping her panties for him. Not that I want Caitlin to do that, right away, but it would be nice for the hot and cold to stop. I feel her heart race when we're together. I know she wants it, but refuses to see that we can be anything more than what we are. Maybe if she doesn't want to see how I feel, my words can convince. Maybe if she hears words from my heart about how I feel, those are from me, and meant for her, she'll stop and think about what we could be together. What are you working on? I spin on my stool to find Liam picking up his guitar. There's no point in hiding the lyrics from him any longer. Not if I want Caitlin to hear them. I hand him the paper. He takes it and starts moving his head up and down. He can already hear himself singing the words. When did you write this? That night after the bar. This is really good. Want to give it a go? I don't know. It's about... I shake my head and pick up my drumsticks. I like her. Quinn likes her. I don't know what to do. She'll come around. And if she doesn't, move on. Her loss. He strums his guitar and starts with the first line. He writes down some notes and starts over until he's found a melody that will work. Why the change of heart? I ask. I've known Caitlin for a long time, but have spent all my adult life with you. I want to see you happy, and if it's her, great, and if not, great. But I'm not going to get in the middle. I'll just encourage. Speaking of, I've been meaning to talk to you about Caitlin, he says without taking his eyes off the paper. Yeah, why? Do you think she can do this job or not? I spin my drumstick between my finger while I contemplate his question. Technically, no, I don't think she can do the job. But we hired her knowing she had no experience. I think she'll learn. I think that we threw her into the tour without any experience. And the things that happened. Do you really think she double-booked us like that? Liam looks up, his eyes steady on mine. No, but I'm not sure I can get over it. I nod. Yeah, I hear ya. I don't know what we're going to do. Liam fired Sam, and I was okay with that. But I'm not willing to let the band suffer for lack of a manager. We left Los Angeles assuming we could make it here, but maybe we can't. Maybe we need to spend more time in L.A. working. The band is too important to let shit slide. Maybe things will get better. Liam smirks as he writes down a note. Maybe I'm just the eternal optimist, and don't want to give up the slight hope I have of making her see the real me. Not the guy she kisses and walks away from.
Chapter 16. Caitlin. For a week, I've avoided the Westbury household. Not because I'm mad at Josie, or upset that Liam yelled at me. I deserved the verbal berating I received. But because that is where I work. Or used to work, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not cut out for the music industry, or any industry for that matter. The tour was a joke. A complete and utter disaster that ended with Devon's manager calling and giving me her own tongue-lashing and threatening to sue the band for misrepresentation. I've had enough. I can't take any more. So I'm going to quit before Liam fires me. Save face that way and keep our friendship intact. I should never have taken a job with him. But once again, my mouth got the better of me, and now, here I sit, with the wanted ads and a red pen, circling potential jobs. Red because I need the reminder that my life is nothing but a downward spiral, and I'm losing control. I've lost it completely. I lay my head down on the cool ground, the grass tickling my cheek. I fight the urge to cry, and not just cry, but to throw a good old temper tantrum about how unfair life is. I didn't sign up for this. I never thought I'd be sitting here at 29 years old worrying about a job. A year and a half ago, everything was so much simpler. My biggest concern was wondering what I'd make for dinner. We weren't well off by any means, and we lived paycheck to paycheck. But it worked. We didn't fight or struggle with making our minimum payments. We just lived. I roll over and look at the clock. It's after midnight, and Mason still isn't home. There's a pounding sound coming from the living room. I get up slowly, realizing that I'm still in my clothes from earlier. Tonight's game had been 2 hours away. A team trying to make a name for themselves asked if we'd come play them. Mason, never one to turn down a game, obliged happily, as did the rest of the team. They loaded up the bus, plus two additional ones for fans, and made the trek. The girls and I went, but left early because it was cold. I walk out into the living room. It's dark, but blue lights flash through the window. The pounding starts again. It's the front door. Mason probably locked himself out. Crazy man, I mutter. I open the door and am met by Paul Baker, the local police chief. Paul? What are you doing here this late?
Hi, Caitlin,
he says as he tips his hat. I push the screen door open and look out into the driveway for Mason's truck. It's not there. I try to keep the feeling of dread from creeping in. But it's there. Something's wrong.
I need to take you down to Beaumont General.
What for? I don't give Paul a chance to even tell me why before I'm asking. Paul takes off his hat. His eyes are red, showing evidence that he's been crying.
Mason's been in an accident. You need to come to the hospital.
My knees buckle. Paul catches me before I hit the ground.
I got you. Come on, Caitlin,
he says as he writes me.
Call Josie. Tell her to come and sit with the girls. They'll be okay until she gets here. Roberta will sit outside. We gotta go.
I nod and walk on shaky legs to the phone. It takes me 4 times to get her number right. The phone rings and goes to voicemail. I hang up and try again. Hello? Josie, I need you to come watch the girls. Mason, he's had an accident, and I need to go. Paul's here. Okay, I'll be over. Josie hangs up, but I stay on the phone listening to the buzzing sound. Mason's been in an accident. An accident. The word plays over and over again in my head, but I'm not grasping the meaning. What kind of accident? Paul's hand presses down on my shoulder, and the other takes the phone from my hand. He sets it down so gently, I barely hear it click.
Come. Caitlin, we need to go.
Is Mason alive? Paul doesn't say anything as he guides me out of the house. He shuts the door behind me and pushes me toward his car, the blue lights blinding me the closer I get. The girls...
They'll be fine. Roberta is right there, see?
I follow the direction he's pointing and see another police car sitting in front of my house. My neighbors are standing on our property line in their robes and slippers, holding hands. I don't want to know what they're thinking when Paul helps me into the front seat and pulls out of the driveway. We drive through the empty streets, and even though he's speeding, it feels like the 15-minute drive is taking an hour. My hands are ringing in my lap. My stomach turns and threatens to empty itself all over the floorboard that my feet rest on. Paul turns into the almost empty parking lot and right up to the emergency room entrance. I look out the window at the sliding glass doors and see a few people walking around. Everything looks calm inside, yet everything inside of me is burning and on edge. Paul opens my door and holds my hand until I'm standing. Everything is moving in slow motion. I hesitate at the door, afraid to cross the threshold. The last time I was here was to give birth to the twins, and something is telling me that I'm leaving here by myself. He nudges me, his hand guiding my back as we walk through the quiet halls. A door clicks, and we are in the center of the action.
Mrs. Powell?
I look at the doctor standing in front of me. His blue scrubs look clean, fresh out of the laundry. I nod, unable to find my voice. Paul motions for us to sit down. I can't move. I shake my head. I need to know what's going on. Where's Mason? When the doctor looks at me, I know. He doesn't need to say the words. My hand covers my mouth, and my head starts to shake back and forth. Paul's arm comes to rest on my waist, holding me up.
Mrs. Powell, if you'd like to see your husband, I can take you to him. He doesn't have much time left. I'm sorry. We've cleaned him up, and he looks like he's sleeping. The machines are keeping him breathing, but he can't breathe on his own, and he has very little brain activity.
He's alive?
At the moment, yes.
The doctor turns, and I follow with Paul beside me. He pauses at the door separating me from my husband. What happened? Paul clears his throat.
He was sitting at the bottom of the hill, waiting for the light to change, when an 18-wheeler came behind him. The truck's brakes gave out at the top of the hill, and he couldn't slow down. The driver said the light changed, but by then he was already too close and hit Mason. He says he honked, but you and I both know Mason probably had the radio turned up, so he probably didn't hear him.
Paul takes a deep breath.
As soon as he hit, Mason lost control. He hit the wall before jumping the guardrail and hitting a tree.
I don't acknowledge Paul or the doctor. I push the door open. My hand covers my mouth as a sob takes over my body. My husband, my school sweetheart, lays before me with a white sheet covering his body. His arms are down at his side. His face, his beautiful face, is bruised and covered in cuts. I can't tell if this is my husband or not. I take tentative steps to his bedside and run my fingers up his arm. I bend slightly and look at his shoulder. Unable to control myself, I lay myself on top of him and cry. This beat-up man is my husband, and he's dying. Mason, I say over and over again, waiting for a sign or some type of response to show me that the doctor is wrong. My husband is strong. He can pull through this. He just needs to know that I'm here, and that I love him. I cup his face, lean in, and kiss his lips. They're cold and uninviting. I run my hand over his hair. He has an appointment tomorrow morning, so he can get a trim. Every 6 weeks, like clockwork. Mason, baby, please wake up. I plead with him. Open your beautiful eyes for me. I lay my head on his chest to feel his heart, but it's so faint.
Katie?
My head pops up, and I see Mr. Powell standing at the end of the bed. I forgot to call him. He looks at me with such sorrow in his eyes. He comes to me, his arms wrapping around my shoulders. He holds me while I cry. I scream loudly, but don't know the words that are coming out of my mouth. His body shakes with mine as we battle the pain that is ripping through our bodies. Our world is leaving us, and we are powerless to stop him from going.
We have to say goodbye.
I shake my head. No, he's strong. He'll pull through.
I know, Katie.
He sighs, holding me tighter. The machine beeps. We break apart. I hold Mason's hand while his father holds his other. My fingers twist his wedding band back and forth while my other hand strokes his cheek. I lean forward, setting my lips by his ear. I love you, Mason Powell. You're the best husband and father. Our daughters love you. If you can hear me, fight, baby. Fight so damn hard because we need you. I need you. I don't know how to live without you. My tears wet the side of his face. I hear his dad taking a deep breath. I can't even begin to imagine how he's doing this. We were in this same hospital not a year ago, saying goodbye to his wife. Mason's body shudders. The beeping stops. I try to choke back a sob, but it racks through my body. I cry for the loss of my husband and best friend. I wipe away the tears that are streaming down my face. I hadn't thought about that night in such a long time. The nightmares are few and far between. Now I just dream about him coming for me. Months ago, that is something I wanted. Not the death part, but to have him in my arms again. But now? Now I wonder if there's something out there for me. Is Harrison the one who can turn things around for me and give the girls a father figure? The answer is no, because I have a feeling that if I replaced Mason, my father-in-law might be hurt, and there's no way I'm going to hurt him. I need help, Mason, I say to his tombstone, knowing that it won't answer, but wishing it would. These feelings I have inside me are raging, building up to the surface, and I feel like I'm going to explode. I'm antsy and on edge. Something has to change, but I don't know what. I hate having feelings for another man when I love you so much. I shouldn't feel like this. My heart, it should know better, Mason. Please tell me what to do. Of course, he doesn't answer. He'll never answer. He'll never sit by my side and help me through the tiniest of problems. He'll never hold my hand and walk with me along the path that we set out for ourselves so many years ago. Harrison will. I sit up, looking around. I see no one, and can't imagine my subconscious would be telling me to move on. Not like this. Not in the place where my husband rests. I know what I have to do, but it won't be easy. I pull out my phone and scroll through my contacts until I find the name that has been looming there since Mason left. I press the number and watch as my phone lights up, telling me I'm calling the one person I'd hoped to avoid because I thought I was strong enough to do this by myself. Hello, this is Caitlin Powell. I need to make an appointment to see Dr. Brooks. I wait on hold until she comes back with my appointment time. I hang up and watch the other mourners, wondering if they'll go through the same thing I have, or if their lives will just continue. There are two little girls. They look to be about the twins' age. Both are dressed the same. Mason was adamant that we never do that to our kids. But we did. I did. He laughed and went along with it, once. I think about Peyton and Elle, and how I don't want them to grow up. How I need them to stay just the way they are, so I don't forget what it was like to have their dad around. I need Peyton to always love football, to keep Mason's spirit alive on Sundays, and for Elle to be the princess that her daddy said she was going to be. I think that is the only thing that is going to keep me afloat.
Chapter 17. Harrison. Grocery shopping. I hate it. And once again, I'm asking myself, why the fuck did I move so far from my mom, or not bring her with me? What the hell was I thinking? Right, I wasn't thinking with my brain, but another member of my anatomy. Because I thought I could win the affection of the hottest chick I'd ever come across. And look where it's gotten me. I'm in the grocery store, looking at a million different boxes of cereal,
standing next to my son who can't make up his mind on which one he wants. Quinn stands next to me, with one arm across his stomach, and his other resting on top of it. His hand is almost cupping his chin as if he's deep in thought about what cereal is going to make his first day of school better. Who knew that buying breakfast food was so challenging? "What do you want?"
"I don't know,"
he says with a shrug. "How can you not know?" His response confuses me. This kid eats cereal every day, and he doesn't know what kind he wants? This is exactly why I paid my mom to do all my shopping.
"Grandma says that I need to eat well because I'll be getting up early, and breakfast is the most important meal of my day."
I look at him and roll my eyes because that is exactly what my mom texted to me last night after I asked her to send me the grocery list. My mom helped us get settled in Beaumont, but returned to Los Angeles when we went on tour. Big mistake. I had forgotten how nice it was to have her around. She was my personal assistant until this big move.
"Mr. James?"
I turn at the sound of my name and find a tall woman with long blonde hair pushing a cart full of food behind us. "Yes?"
"I'm Monica Lowell, from Quinn's school, his teacher. We met at the end of the school year when you came in and registered him."
I look at her for a moment before her words set in. "Oh, yes, hi." I extend my hand and shake hers.
"I see you're getting ready for school to start."
I look at our barren grocery cart and compare it to hers. I need a lot more food. "Yeah, we just got back from being on tour. Need to replenish."
"Quinn, are you ready for school?"
He shrugs, which I'm starting to think is his new thing. "I'm sure he's ready." Quinn looks back at me briefly before turning back to the cereal selection. Maybe he's not ready for public school.
"Well, it was nice to run into you guys. I'll see you in a few days. Bye."
I watch her as she walks down the aisle. My head bends slightly when she bends over to pick something up.
"She likes you."
"What are you talking about?"
"I can tell. She makes those eyes."
"What eyes?" I ask.
"The same one Josie makes at Liam all the time. Noah teases her about it. He says they're the sexy eyes."
"You guys watch too much TV," I say, as I push the cart away. "Pick a cereal and let's go." I head to the next aisle and find his teacher there as well. She looks and smiles when she sees me. I wink, even though I don't mean to, and the result is an instant blush. She fumbles with the box that she had in hand, and I can tell she's embarrassed. I try not to laugh, and have to turn away so she doesn't see the shit-eating grin on my face. Quinn's right. Maybe she does have a crush.
"Oh, ouch!"
I turn back around and find Monica bent over rubbing her head. "Are you okay?" I ask as I walk to her.
"Fine,"
she responds in a raspy voice. This is the same voice that Elle uses when she's trying not to cry. I reach for her hand and pull it away from her head. She's got the makings of a nasty goose egg forming. "What did you do?"
"It's stupid. I'll be fine. The shelf and I had a disagreement."
"It doesn't look fine. You need some ice." I move her hair away from her face and study her wound, as if I'm suddenly a doctor. I'm closer to her than I want to be, but I feel responsible for what she's done to herself. I don't intend to flirt with her, but it's nice to be flirted with. So I inadvertently return the gesture.
"Dad, look who's..."
My head snaps to Quinn's voice, and behind him is Caitlin. When I look at her, her eyes immediately look down to the ground. Well, isn't this great? I'm in a no-win situation already. So what the hell? "You should really put some ice on your bump and call me if you need anything."
"I will. Thanks."
I smile and go back to my cart. Caitlin is still standing there, and for the life of me, I'm not sure why. She made it very clear that we'll never be anything to each other. So why does she look so down? "Your teacher bumped her head," I say to Quinn. Quinn looks from me to Caitlin. I know he likes her, but I can't force her to be with me. The look on his face tells me everything I need to know. He doesn't want me talking to his teacher. Come on, we gotta finish shopping. I set my hand on his shoulder and guide him out of the aisle without a second look at Monica and with nothing said to Caitlin. Now I know why I paid my mom to do all my shopping. The grocery store is full of drama and confusion. I fire up my bike for the first time in months. I don't know why I don't ride it more often, especially since Quinn likes it. It's just not practical, unless we are going for a drive, and we haven't done that in a long time. I drive to the water tower, Liam's favorite place to sit and relax, except tonight is some type of celebration that he's invited me to. I'm surprised that the town of Beaumont hasn't removed the ladder and deemed water tower drinking against the law. But I suppose when your police force are all locals, they turn a blind eye to such a thing. When I arrive, the party is in full force. I park away from most of the trucks. The last thing I need is for a beer bottle to hit my bike. I leave my helmet on my seat and look around for Liam or Josie. Music is blasting out of a stereo, a throwback to the 80s. Yo! James! I look up, shielding the setting sun with my hand. Liam's waving his arm back and forth, trying to get my attention.
Are you going up?
Josie steps next to me, dressed in a shirt that says, Liam Page's Candy. I know he had Luke make it especially for her. If Caitlin was mine, I'd adorn her chest with something like, Fuck Calm, do a drummer, or Drummers Do It Better. That thought only lasts for a brief moment, because there's no way in hell Caitlin will ever be mine. Yeah, probably. What's all this for? I motion to the crowd. There has to be 20, maybe 30 people here.
It's Friday night. Most of us will head on over to the school for the game. Some will stay here and get the grill going. This has been tradition for a long time, and Liam's first one since he's been back.
Small town living, huh?
Oh, I don't know about that. Beaumont isn't that small.
I laugh. She has no idea. You can live in Los Angeles and never run into the same stranger twice. It's small to me.
Well, whatever Beaumont is, we're happy you're here.
Is that so? Josie nods. She looks at Liam before turning back to me.
I didn't know how things would work when we got back together, but I didn't care because I just wanted to be with him. I told myself I'd deal with the long nights and the travel just as long as he always came back.
Josie toes the ground before taking a deep breath. I'm not sure where she's going with this, but I'll gladly lend her an ear if she needs one.
Anyway, when you decided to move here, it made its decision easier. So I thank you, Harrison. Because of you, my son has his dad home for more nights.
I didn't do anything. I like it here. Josie smiles and leans in to give me a hug. I wrap my arms around her and look up at Liam. He's shaking his head. Josie steps back. She looks around before looking at me again.
You'll find happiness here.
I shrug. I'm not worried. It's not exactly a lie, but if I stress about it too much, I'll let my productivity suffer, and I can't do that. My drums can take a beating before I let the band down. I'm going to head up with Liam. I'll see you later. I lean in and kiss her on the cheek. Liam is one lucky son of a bitch. I climb the ladder and am greeted by a beer being tossed at my head. Liam snickers as I fumble the catch, almost losing a full one. The other guys with him laugh and make small talk. A few I've met, others are new. I sit next to Liam. My legs dangle over the edge. I look down and question my sanity and the stability of this walkway. If this tower is still used, how often are they doing repairs? I pop the cap on my bottle and down my beer. The thought of drinking enough so I don't feel any pain is a pleasing thought, but tomorrow will suck, and that's not fair to Quinn. I let my bottle sail into the back of a truck, and at the same time I see Caitlin walking across the field toward Josie. She's dressed in those stupid Daisy Duke shorts that my sister likes, and even though she's about a foot shorter than I am, her legs go for a mile long until her strappy sandals come into view. What the fuck is wrong with me? I shake my head to clear my vision. But that does nothing for me as my eyes watch some dude come up to her and give her a hug. His hand lingers on her back longer than it should. She doesn't move his hand or step away from him. They stand there talking to Josie like they're some couple. Is this who she wants to be with? Some slack-wearing tweed sport coat type of guy? How boring is that? I reach for another beer, popping the cap and downing this one just as fast. I throw it hard, hoping to catch her attention. I don't, and it pisses me off. I should have known she was coming here tonight. If this is their tradition, why would she stay home? These are her friends, not mine. I reach for my third, catching Liam's eye in the process. His eyebrow is raised and he's smirking. I hate when he smirks. It usually means something's on his mind, and I'm about to hear some insightful bullshit from the great Liam Page. What? Nothing, man. Just haven't seen you drink that fast in a long time. Josie's my DD tonight, so you can crash at the house if you want. I pop the top and set my beer down between my legs. Tonight is supposed to be fun. The last hurrah before summer is over, and the adults have to focus on their kids. Yet, all I want to do is get drunk and create havoc. I haven't felt this wound up in a long time. I lean against the rail and look out over the crowd. I try not to seek out Caitlin, but my eyes gravitate toward her, no matter how hard I try to stare at the other scantily clad women that are here. I could go back to the way I was before I moved here. Keeping a woman on standby for a few months at a time. No connections, no emotions. But that's not what I want. I want her. Everything in me is saying give up, that I don't need her. But I do. I need her like I need to breathe. So, Liam says, breaking my reverie. I take a long pull off my beer and look at him. I'm thinking the four of us hit L.A. for a combined bachelor-bachelorette party. You're having a party? Why on earth would he want to do this? He's got the perfect woman on his arms, and he wants to fuck it up with a night in L.A. where all the groupies are? Why wouldn't we? I don't know. Because you're not single? Nah, it's not like that. Josie wants to go to L.A., and we have an award show coming up. Let's take the girls. I shake my head and start peeling the label off the bottle. You act like Caitlin and I are together, and we're not. Hell, we aren't even speaking right now. No, but she's Josie's, whatever you call it, and you're my best man. This is like wedding law or some shit. I don't know. I'm just trying to make her happy. Whatever, man. L.A. and award shows are a mistake, especially with Sam being there. I down the rest of my beer and throw it to the bed of the truck. But if that's what you want, fine. The only exciting idea about going back is that I'll be able to sleep in my own bed. Evie moved into my apartment when I left, and she'll be on Broadway with her show. I'm going to take off, I say as I get up, patting him on the shoulder. I'll come down with you. Liam and I descend the rickety ladder one at a time. I'm going to suggest an alternative place to hang out. I'm not sure the ladder is going to hold many more of us. I'm sure it was fine when they were teens, but some of them have put on a few pounds since. We walk. Well, I walk. Liam struts to where Josie and Caitlin are. The douche that was touching her is still near her, but with his back turned. How can any man turn his back on her, I'll never understand. So, baby, Liam says as he wraps Josie in his arms. She giggles, and while that used to make me cringe, I'd give everything to hear Caitlin do that as a result of my arms. We're going to go to L.A. for our dual parties.
What if I wanted a stripper?
My mouth drops. Caitlin stifles a laugh behind her hand. Liam's face turns red as his mouth opens and shuts. Josie stands there with her eyebrow raised and her arms crossed. Oh, this will be good. You... Liam looks down at the ground and takes a deep breath. Okay, he says when he looks back at Josie, who looks like she's about to crack under pressure.
Don't tease him, Josie.
Liam looks from Caitlin to Josie.